with such permanence as time has. An Indian girl lived in the brownstone. Her name was Kalpita. I had known her before, in a different time, in a different life, of which we will not speak. I will say that the last time I had seen her, she was on her way to Europe to get married to a doctor or a lawyer or someone of some supposed prestige. How strange to see her now, back in a big American city, living in a building otherwise populated by strange, demented older people, all waiting to die. Her apartment consisted of a single room with two beds, like a hotel, with a nightstand between them and a beige telephone. There was a small table and chair set up in lieu of a practical kitchen, and a dwarf fridge in the corner. In the closet, there was a hanging bag of clothes she never unpacked, three steps which led up to nothing, and walls covered in a shag rug the color of filth. She was the only thing alive for miles. I have no idea how the two of us, on our way to being three, ever found one another again. It makes no sense at times how people from your life who played minor roles will one day be recycled in order for you to play a minor role in theirs. I want to say she was there because she was hiding. Hiding from her grandmother, of course, which made no sense, as the old woman was dead and had been dead for 3 years running. Hiding from her ex-husband, although I never found out if the divorce was ever begun, much less finalized. I never found out why she left him or why, despite her concerns, he seemed never to come looking for her. These were the things that drove her. She stayed inside. She sometimes sat on a lawn chair in her doorway so that she could experience a patch of sunlight descending onto her face in the afternoons, and she would smoke exactly one cigarette a day. She must have been, at the time, 30 years old. She had, I assume, simply started waiting to die early. She was always an overachiever, so I'm not sure why this surprised me. I'm even less sure of why it surprises me still. If you're wondering why I haven't said much about myself, it's because, thinking back on this, I have the same sense of myself that I do in dreams. In dreams, any details about self are unneeded. You're simply you, whatever that means. Indeed, that portion of my life is very hazy and indistinct. I do remember that over the course of 6 months, the woman I had planned to marry for 6 years had abruptly called off our relationship and disappeared from my life. My mother disappeared from my life as well due to cancer. My father had abandoned both of us long before I was old enough to form coherent memories about him, something for which it feels oddly necessary to thank him. Regardless, I considered myself an orphan, although at the time I was 28 it didn't make the concept any easier to grasp. The people who brought you into this world are gone. You are, for the first time in your life, truly alone. It was in this frame of mind that I had decided to drink. Not drink to slowly kill myself, which would be too much work, and regardless, as depressed as I was, I still enjoyed breathing. I wasn't even drinking like I used to drink back in college, which involved heroic doses of anything I could lay hands upon. No, this was simply drinking to punish myself. Just a little. The reason for this punishment was never fully established, nor had I sought it out to nail it down. It was in a bar I saw Kalpita. It wasn't even a proper bar, to be truthful. It was just the closest thing I could find without expending effort. It was a bar that seemed to have had an aborted nightclub grow up around it. At one end of the bar I sat, reacquainting myself with the bottom of a glass which the bartender kept obscuring with more black Russian. One moment I was studying the bottles reflected in the glass behind the bartender. The next, I had looked to my left and seen her sitting there. It's insane how people age. Myself, I can see the lines in my face becoming deeper and more sharply defined, the bags under my eyes that once only came out after a night poring over a research paper or a terribly solid bender. They appear to have taken up permanent residence. I've gotten to where I hardly notice them. As for Kalpita, the process of growing older seemed to have done nothing but enhance the natural beauty she already possessed. There was something about the odd combination of features, her raven hair, her slightly peaked nose, her dark olive complexion, and eyes that seemed black beyond imagination. All of this became more refined over the 10 years since I had seen her last. She was not beautiful. That was not the word I would use. I'm not a writer. I don't know the word to use. If I still painted, I could paint you the concept, and perhaps then I could make you understand. We noticed each other, and then noticed that we had noticed each other. There was a shared sense of resignation. When you see someone from your past, you can always fall back on a mutual, unspoken understanding that neither of you actually saw the other. You can both pretend and thus avoid what could turn out to be an embarrassing or unnecessary reunion, but here, I believe we had drawn the same conclusion, that it made no difference whether or not we spoke and knew each other again, so there was no reason not to. If there was any difference to her other than how she had grown older and done so effectively, it was the fact that she now never smiled. The entire time we spoke, what little we did speak, she merely sipped her drink and remained stoically without expression. She never spoke of her marriage. I never spoke of my marriage that never was. For two former acquaintances seeing each other again after so long, we said nothing to each other about our respective pasts. We spoke of the present, and there was no future. After she had half-heartedly invited me back to her place and we were walking down the sidewalk, quiet and alone together as we were, there was something else I noticed. It was not about her. It was in my reaction to her. Years before, she had been an exotic beauty, an unattainable goal upon which I'd spent many a fruitless hour of fantasy, and though she was not diminished now, such desires for her seemed strangely absent. It was then I was introduced to her apartment, passing shut doors behind which decrepit televisions keened into the night, seeking out ears that were beyond hearing, much less caring. We crept through the halls to her room. That summer was hot, and the bargain living quarters she had did not account for any kind of air conditioning. The room with the door shut, she explained, was stifling. So she mostly kept the door wide open all the time. After a visual examination of the room, I decided there was nothing worth stealing inside, her only property being what I have already described to you. We sat side by side on her bed for the longest time, listening to the city rolling on without us outside her door. It would have been so easy to reach over and put my arm around her, to try and comfort her. But I had no idea what I wanted to comfort her about, or comfort myself about. I felt like I didn't have the ability to comfort, even if I had wanted to, and I had no real desire to find anything. I found myself wishing I had some alcohol there, but even that was faint and ill-defined. It took a moment for my distracted mind to focus on what she was doing. She had placed one of her hands flat against the crotch of my jeans and my sex beneath it. She asked me if I wanted to, in the same tone she might have used to suggest any random thing that would pass the time. I merely nodded my assent, and her fingers went to work freeing me. She bent down and used her mouth on me, an activity that had rattled through my teenage brain countless times. I sat there and let her have her way with me, listening to the city, to the television sets down the hall, wondering at being fellated in an apartment building with the door wide open as it was. When she finished, she sat up and rested her forehead against mine for a moment only, ostensibly to regain her balance and catch her breath. There was no tenderness to this gesture, no intimacy to feeling her against me. I took some notion of comfort in this. It was enough. At some point thereafter, it could have been minutes, an hour, two, I made my goodbyes. She told me I could come back any time I wanted. I told her I would. And I did. A few nights a week I would come by her room. When she was there, we would sit together on the bed, perhaps share some food, if either of us thought to bring any. At some point, she would offer what she had given before. Even though I never asked about it, nor did I ever really expect it, I always accepted. It was never discussed, really. It just happened and then was done. And so it went for a month or so. At some point earlier in my life, I probably would have stopped, gotten her flowers, a gift, something. Probably I would have tried to court her, somehow, despite her nebulous marital status at the time. But in the state of mind I found myself in, it was not the kind of thing I could rouse myself to. Besides, even though I never shared this ghost of an inclination with Kalpita, the entire notion felt unnecessary with her, if not simply undesired. At the end of that month is when both of us met Claire. There was a new tenant on the same floor that Kalpita stayed on, an old man who ordered sandwiches every day from the deli 2 blocks over on 15th. I had joined Kalpita for her early evening doorway sitting session. She had finished her cigarette for that day and was merely looking out at the city. I was to her left on the floor, sitting with my back against the wall, my legs stretched out across the walkway. Then Claire came around the corner. She was slightly younger than we were, about 24, with blonde hair that came down to her shoulders. She had one of those button noses, the type that you never realize why they refer to someone as having a button nose until you see them. She was wearing a pair of faded denim overalls and a baseball cap that had the name of the deli on the front. She walked past us and stepped over my legs with a smile and an "excuse me," then she was around another corner and gone. On her way off the floor and out of the building, she must have circumnavigated the floor the other direction back to the elevator, because we never saw her make her exit. That was on a Monday, and the incident repeated itself, almost verbatim, every single evening of that week. Only the clothing of the three participants in this bizarre little ritual changed. On that Friday, though, is when Claire came back to us. Calpita had taken her lawn chair back inside, folded it up, and set it against the wall. I was sitting on one of the beds again. Neither of us knew how long it had been since one of us had spoken. That's probably why hearing Claire's voice from the doorway had startled me so. "Got a light?" Calpita and I turned, and there she was. She was back in the overalls, with a different shirt underneath, and the baseball cap was off, dangling from one hand. That's when I first noticed her hair, and how marvelously strange it looked backlit by the sun setting over the tops of buildings. In her other hand, she held up a cigarette. She was smiling. Calpita didn't say a word, but simply fished a cigarette lighter from her jeans pocket and walked in her sock feet over to the young woman. Calpita lit her cigarette. Claire puffed from it thoughtfully and smiled. "Thanks," she said. Although Claire introduced herself to us, she never really asked to be invited in. Calpita had simply moved aside and let her, and Claire had come into the room and sat down on the floor. "Done for the day," she announced. "Mr. Alston was the last. Weekend arrives." Calpita looked completely nonplussed as she sat down in one of the chairs at the kitchen table, as though strangers walking in and beginning random conversations was perfectly normal. "I thought I would say hello," Claire continued, "seeing as how I seem to be interrupting your evening reverie on a nightly basis." I think I simply smiled in response. I didn't trust my voice to be able to speak or my mind to be able to form words. This was a conversation, unfolding before my very eyes. I felt like this girl wanted something from me, from Calpita, from both of us. At that moment, though I was smiling, I remember wanting her to leave. Quickly. There was a delicate balance at work here, and she was upsetting it. "So you two appear to be the only people under the age of 60 for 3 square blocks, she said. "Did you know that? I swear, I deliver sandwiches all up and down the buildings here. You are the 2 youngest faces I've seen." "Like attracts like," Calpita said simply. Claire smiled at that. She never seemed to stop smiling. It was attractive, and an attractive woman was simply not something that I needed at that point in my life. "So what do you do?" Calpita uncrossed her legs, then recrossed them in the opposite direction. "Myself, I do nothing. He, however," she said, nodding to where I sat on the bed, "is a painter." Claire puffed on her cigarette and looked at me. "Really? Painter as in you have a name at it, or painter as in you do it in your garage and wish it were more than a hobby, but it probably won't ever be?" "Somewhere in between," I finally said. "And what do you do here?" Claire asked me. "He's helping me," Calpita said. "Helping me do my job." "Doing nothing?" Claire asked. "That's right," Calpita said. "We're taking applications. Stay a while, help us. It's busy work." My fears were realized. Claire smiled, and then we were 3. My visits to Calpita's place became more frequent, almost against my will. Sometimes it would be Calpita and I, together alone as we had been before, but most times, by the time I arrived, Claire would already be there. A conversation would be in full swing, Claire doing most of the grunt work on it, Calpita interjecting as little as possible, but still enough to keep everything moving. Claire asked questions. She had opinions. She wanted to know more so she could form better opinions. She had a vigor for life that I found, as the man remarked, appalling. Finally, she demanded to see some of my work. It's true what Calpita said, or was true. I was a painter, an artist. I had actually attended art school for about 2 years before becoming disillusioned with the entire routine and dropping out. I'd kept a day job as one of those phone operators that you call to complain about your credit card balance, partly to keep myself in paint and canvas, and partly, I joked, to make sure that something kept sucking away at my soul so I could be inspired to paint. I had even managed to pull some strings and get a couple of gallery showings. My paintings were beginning to sell. I'd expected this to somehow make me happy, and yet it had not. It was as if there was this gap in myself, this hole that I wished to fill, and I threw finished canvases down the void, trying to eventually smooth it over, but nothing had worked. Still, though, it was enough to drive me. The next painting, I told myself. The next one, aye, there's the rub, that would finally soothe me. Claire persisted. Calpita did not interject on my behalf, so a few visits later, I brought up my portfolio, a black, large, rectangular case with a handle on it that looked like it had seen years of road. I unzipped it and gave an impromptu art show on the bed that Calpita and I had shared with unadorned abandon. These were mostly sketches, studies, and the last was a watercolor I had done of a nude during my last week in art school. There had been something about the model's pose, something that spoke to me. I had finished 3 different watercolor studies of the model before I settled on this last one. For some reason, Calpita and Claire looked over this one with great interest. They both remarked how it was their favorite of all the others. This I could understand, for it was one of my favorites as well. I had enough information captured where I could go and create a full painting, but somehow something was lost in the translation. The moment had been captured at the moment, and could not be reignited now. I tried to explain this to the two of them. Claire seemed to understand, of course, but Calpita was unreadable, as she always was. I thought the two of them sated as far as my art went. I thought that we could now safely return to doing absolutely nothing, talking about nothing of interest, of consequence. The draw of such a thing was more attractive to me than anything else. Then, one day as I was about to leave for another session at Calpita's, perhaps trying to arrive earlier than Claire for some release of sexual tension, or not, I felt so completely detached from it all even while it was happening, the phone rang. There is no more alien sound in the world than a phone ringing in an empty apartment, which is an even stranger thought when you realize, as I did, that the apartment was not empty. I still stood in it. Perhaps it was the fact that the phone no longer rang on a regular basis. In fact, I think the last time the phone had rung was with the news of my mother's passing. I stared at it for the briefest of moments, certain that I had hallucinated the occurrence. But no, it happened again. I lifted up the receiver tentatively and said, "Hello?" It was Claire, obviously on a payphone somewhere, made evident by the amount of background noise. "Bring your painting stuff." I remember saying, completely put out, "Painting stuff, Claire?" She giggled at my confusion. I remember that as clear as if it were yesterday, the clearest, purest thing you had ever heard. I remember shivering despite myself. "Your paints, silly, you know, and some canvas, whatever you need." I stood there, holding the phone, stupefied. "Claire, what do you—" "Just do it," she said kindly. "Don't disappoint us." And the line went dead. I remained as I was, holding the phone up to my ear where the dial tone accused me of something. After a moment, I put the phone back in its cradle. Then I went about the apartment and collected my things, my palette, my paints, my easel, a series of brushes, a fresh bit of canvas. I bundled these up and set off for Calpita's apartment. When I arrived, Calpita was sitting in a chair waiting for me, alone. She was dressed in a robe. "Go ahead," she said. "Set up. We have a surprise for you." I don't recall saying a word. I simply set up my easel, placed a canvas upon it, and put out my things on the one table. Calpita watched us all wordlessly, her face closed to me. When I was ready, I grabbed my initial brush and looked at her, questioning. "Shut the door," she said. This gave me pause. The door to this apartment had never, in all the times I had been there, been shut. Not even when we were together on the bed, or apart on the bed, whichever it felt more like at the time, had the door been shut. To my knowledge, no one had ever ventured by and caught us in the act, but still, I obeyed. I pulled the door shut. When I turned, Claire had stepped from the closet, also in a robe. Calpita took her hand and led her to the bed. Both the ladies disrobed before me and were completely naked. They moved with purpose. This had all been planned. They climbed onto the bed and posed. Claire sat down on the bed facing away from me. Calpita sat down facing me, but behind Claire so that her torso was covered. They sat with their legs around each other so that both were resting on the bed, their bottoms perhaps mere inches from one another. They entangled together in a practiced way. Calpita put an arm around Claire's back and then laid her chin on Claire's shoulder and looked at me. I am not a voyeur by practice. I don't paint nudes when I do paint nudes because I need any kind of titillation. In fact, normally I find the actual painting of nudes to be as erotic as you might find fixing some plumbing or washing your car. It's a task to be done. The fact that there is a naked person in the room while it's occurring is incidental. But there was something in their pose. The fact that, as they were both completely naked and yet entirely unexposed. No breast was showing, no buttocks, nothing. It was all skin and yet not skin at all. The contrast of Calpita's dark skin against Claire's smooth, pale skin was striking, and all lines in the pose led back to Calpita's face and those eyes. They were not naked. They were clothed in each other. And this affected me on some level that I still cannot explain. I took a moment, and without thinking, I began to paint. I'm not sure how long I took to get the initial pose down, but I worked quickly. When a vision like this is before an artist, whether it's two women posing or a tree in the right light, you take no chances. You capture it as fast and as efficiently as possible. I remember my hand being steady, as if it were a tool and not the thing actually holding the tool. I remember looking at the two of them with such distance as I normally beheld my subjects, but yet there was an intimacy in that room that I cannot describe. I don't know how they held that pose for so long. Later I would find it was 2 hours, 2 hours to produce what I did, but still it felt like days. I did Calpita's eyes last. Two immensely clear dots of brownish black, staring at the viewer, staring at me, from over an ocean of pale flesh. I put my brush aside, and I sat down. I remember someone saying, I think it was Calpita, "He's done." And I heard them untangle. I heard them rise from the bed. I heard vertebra snap gleefully. I heard them make satisfied, stretching noises. Then they both walked over, still naked, to view what I had made of them. They appraised it, and both seemed satisfied. "What will you call it?" Claire asked. "The Two Graces," Calpita answered for me. "And you are Splendor in Abundance?" I asked. Calpita nodded. "You won't be needing the third one," she said. Then she took my face gently in her hands, and she kissed me on the mouth. The only time in our whole relationship that she did so. Then Claire did the same, kissed me on the mouth. These were odd kisses, not passionate, though not completely lacking in passion. I have no way to describe them. They didn't feel like a reward. I felt as though I already had the reward. The rest of the evening passed without incident. They both had gotten fully dressed and acted as though nothing had happened. The conversation was mostly between the two of them, for I was rapt in staring at the picture I had created. It was the best thing I had ever painted. I knew at the moment I had put brush to canvas. It was also the last thing I ever painted. Eventually I made my way home, carrying my work with me. When I arrived, I hung it in the foyer. It stayed there ever since. This is the part where you, my reader, if there is indeed ever a reader for this, will wonder about the ending, though in reality I've already given it to you. Everything ended with that one painting. Oh, certainly, a couple of weeks later I went to Calpita's to find the door shut again, but this time forever. She had moved away and left no forwarding address. Perhaps her husband had found her, her family, or perhaps she just didn't want me to find her. I don't know. And perhaps I never will. Claire and I stayed in touch for a while. I think we might have gone out on what passed for dates a couple of times, but eventually I lost interest. There was just something missing in her that I always saw in her, with Calpita present. There was something about the two of them together, something I had captured in that painting, and now it was gone. It was one of those odd, once-in-a-lifetime moments. And I couldn't get back to it, no matter how hard I tried. As I said, I stopped painting. There didn't seem to be much point, as I had somehow sapped myself of everything I had wanted to say, everything I wanted, in that one picture which hung in my foyer. Every so often I try to pick up a brush again, but there just doesn't seem to be any point. The lines mean nothing to me now. When someone does make it by the apartment, they stand and stare at the two graces in my foyer. If I had told you the offers I had turned down to sell it, you would be amazed. Or perhaps not. I see it myself every day on my way to my cubicle, and I see it every night upon my return. Calpita's eyes call to me from the canvas, inviting me to... what? I do not know. As I stand in the fading light from the windows, with all dark in my apartment, with nothing visible but the places on Claire's back uncovered by Indian skin, and two brown pinpoints of eyes, I can't help but wonder why she did it. Why both of them did it, together. Why they gave me this gift that I can't seem to shake, no matter how hard I try to pretend that I'm trying. If you had known beforehand that a single moment could rule you so completely, would you have allowed the moment to transpire? In the end, was it worth it? At odd hours of the night and morning, I wonder why she condemned me to such an existence. Why I have condemned myself is a question I have not yet begun to contemplate.